Alright, hello everyone. Thanks for tuning in. Scruffy Fern here. Today I'm with Rory O'Connor, who's going to be walking us through a really cool library that he built that allows you to do analytics using Azure. So you're going to walk us through a little bit of how you set it up. We're going to discuss, you know, what you use on the Azure side as well as show off some of the code. Mm-hmm. And you're going to kind of show us what you did with it. You built a heat mapping system, I believe?
Yeah, I built like a simple heat mapping system.
Very cool. So we'll show how you can kind of embed that in a Unity game and mm-hmm. Take a look at that as well.
Yeah,
very, very cool. I'm excited to see this. I've seen bits and pieces as he's been building it, but I actually haven't seen the finished product yet, so I'm kind of stoked to see it.
Okay. Well, we'll get started then.
Awesome.
So analytics and heat mapping and all that stuff, it's important stuff.
Oh, definitely.
You know, when you're making a game, you want to know where things are happening, mm-hmm. you know, where the major flaws or major, you know, non-flaws are in your game, right? That way you can fix things and you can balance things the way you want them.
Yeah, you've got to know your audience in order to be able to market towards them as well, right? So if you can have analytics in there to see, you know, how long people are playing, where they're dying inside of your game, which is what heat mapping really does well, is it lets you see, like, spots where maybe there's a pinch point in your map or there's a spot, like, you know, if it's a platformer where they're constantly dying and then you know, hey, I got to go back and make a change there. There's an issue and my game's not very fun with that
exactly.
bug in there, right?
Exactly. So today what we're really going to talk about is we're going to be using Azure to store a bunch of information.
Very cool.
And so we're going to be calling to that, and we're going to be pushing some information to that, we're going to be pulling it back, and we're going to be doing some stuff with it to present the heat map.
Very cool.
So we're going to go through a few things to, like, get that set up. So for this to work for somebody, the things that we'll be using today is we're going to be using Unity.
Okay.
Version, I used 5.1 for this. It should go all the way back to 4.6 and be fine.
Okay.
If people are using the examples and stuff like that. But I would suggest at least 5.1. Also, we're going to be using some sort of, you know, code editing. I use Visual Studios myself, but you could use MonoDevelop if you want to use that. Mm-hmm. It should work. It shouldn't be a problem. You're going to need some sort of Azure subscription, of course. You don't need to have, like, a big fancy one. You can do the prepaid. That's what I use.
Okay.
You know, because for this in itself, it's not using too much. So.
And if you don't already have one, there is a free one-month trial.
Exactly. There's a free one-month trial.
And if you're a startup, there's also our
business
program.
I used mine up a long time ago. but for this, it shouldn't cost you any money. I'm pretty sure throughout the whole development, I didn't pay a cent.
Oh, wow.
Because I don't push enough for Microsoft to care, apparently. and you'll need an internet connection, obviously.
Obviously,
yes. I mean, it's what you're doing, right? And then some sort of game project that you might want to do this for,
yeah.
obviously.
You can even just grab a demo project off the asset store or something.
You can grab a demo project, yep, or, you know, anything you might be working on, just so you can see how this goes. Mm-hmm. So, first of all, we talked about a heat map. What is a heat map? A heat map is just a visual representation of data. Mm-hmm. So, you guys might have seen them around. You might even see the Weather Channel, you know, is a good one, where it shows the clouds coming in. This is where the storm is going to be, mm-hmm. right? And it'll be red, like, this is where the bad area is going to be. Stay away from there, sort of thing. And that's basically what a heat map is. And so it's a really good way of presenting, like, that data, like, where is my problems? They're red, mm-hmm. sort of thing. So our problem with what we want to do is we want to balance the gameplay. Issues with that are, you know, getting data from people, and getting feedback from people, it's not always reliable, and it's mm-hmm. not always fast. You know, you can put out surveys, you can do whatever you want, but sometimes people are, you know, they're pandering to the survey.
Yes.
You know, all kinds of things. You can't trust people all the time, even if they're trying to be as honest as possible.
Yeah.
Because you don't always know what you're
it's
saying.
It's difficult. People will try to game the system. Yeah.
They will try to game the system. But assuming that people are innocent, you know, this way, you don't have to rely on that. Yeah. You don't have to wait for them. When they're playing your game, you're pushing the data to Azure, and it's going to stay there until you're ready to pull it back down and look at it. And hopefully, if you know, in your game is built all correctly, then they'll never know what happened, unless they're on a mobile device, and it'll just ask them, can we connect to the internet, and then they'll wonder why. So our solution today is we're going to push that to Azure, and then we're going to pull it down, and we're going to make that.
Okay.
And it's we're going to use a very simple particle system, and then display the data. We have a small cart game that we're going to use to do that in, which people might recognize.
From the first video that I did when I was showing off the back end. We decided, you know what, let's just use that game so we don't have to keep building a game every time I wanted to do a new video. So.
And I made some, like, we didn't have a lot of time to push real data into it, so I pushed some data into it.
Yeah.
And I'll show how to get the data in there today and stuff like that. But
it's our cooked turkey.
Yeah, it's our cooked, yeah, right? It's the movie magic.
Yes.
And here it's done. so there's that. So as we already talked about how Microsoft can help with that, how Azure can help with that, and it can do it in a lot of ways. You can do it for any language. Like I personally, for this library, I used C++, and I use like a REST SDK called Casablanca, with the C++ SDK that you guys already have for Azure.
Mm-hmm.
It's fairly new, but it got the job done. I liked it. But it's for everything else. So if you like your JavaScript, they got them for those. If you like, pretty much any language.
Yeah, it's basically a library that allows you to connect to the REST APIs,
mm-hmm.
right?
Exactly.
Using any language you want, right, on the front end.
Exactly, and Microsoft's provided all those for everybody.
Yes, it's very cool. I played around with it myself a little bit. It's pretty neat.
So if you don't like C++ for whatever reason, I love it. You can go and use another language, and there's going to be no problem. What I've done is I've created a small system that pushes to a blob storage system. And what blob storage is just simple storage that is kept in no particular order. So you can think of it like a bucket.
Okay.
And I have a bucket for, I don't know, crab shells, we'll say. And I'll have that bucket, and when I'm done eating crab, I throw the crab shells in there. And then I can take it out there, and I can see all the crab shells that I have. But I don't really care how they went into the bucket. I don't really care how they come out of the bucket. I just need to know that they're all in there.
Okay.
So that's basically what we're doing here. We push all the data in, and then we take it out in no particular order, and then we do whatever we have to on our own.
And so is that the reason you decided to use blob storage?
Yeah. It's fast.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't care about those things.
Yeah, so you can stream things a little quicker.
Yeah, when you throw it in there, it's just saying, oh, we got more data. We'll just put it over there somewhere.
Okay.
And there's different ways you can use blob storage. There's pages, there's blocks, and things like that. And, I mean, they both have their own merits. I used block because, again, block, there's no structure. It doesn't care. It just wants you to give it data in a certain format, and then it'll store it on its own. So I did it that way. But page has its merits because it's more organizable if you want to keep it in a certain order and stuff like that. But block is also very good if you have a lot of different people accessing it, either pushing data to it or pulling data from it.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't bottleneck anybody.
Well, you don't have the overhead of the sorting algorithms and everything,
exactly.
Right, to make sure that everything's in the right place.
Yeah, that'll be on the game side. And that's where I put it. So when I show the pulling it down and presenting the data, that's all only happening for you or me, the developer. It's not going to happen for the customer. It's not going to happen for the player. It's not going to happen for any of that. It's not going to happen on Azure. So we're not even taxing Azure for that. Right?
Awesome. Keeps costs down that way, too.
Yeah, it does keep costs down, because if you're running a VM to do that, then you might actually see some money pop up.
Yeah, then you have
up.
Some extra overhead, yeah.
Yeah, and then there's other ways you could do it if you wanted to. I mean, Azure offers all kinds of databasing options if you want really, like, structured
data. Yeah, there's SQL. There's no SQL. There's, you got the block. You got the page.
Yeah, so
different types. That basically anything to fit any kind of need that you might have in your project.
Exactly, and it's just when I was looking through stuff, I was like, oh, what does Azure offer? A lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I sort of found this as sort of a nice middle ground. It's got exactly what I need, and it's fast.
Yeah,
or it's faster than some of the other options. So going along, we have to get started with Azure. That's the first step. Everybody here is going to have to do. Some of you might have Azure accounts. Some of you might not. So the first thing you want to do is you want to go to azure.microsoft.com, and there you can make your account. You can sign up for your free trial, as we talked about, all that stuff. Like I said, I used my free trial a long time ago. So first step then would be going there, setting that up, and then once you're in your Azure account, you can see that there's all kinds of options. All down the side of the page, you'll see, different options for mobile, everything. What we want is just storage.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it'll show up as. So you'll go to storage, and you'll want to click on the new button down at the bottom, and it'll come up, and it'll, just like this, it'll show, as we have in the slide here, sort of a quick create, and you'll get to make like a name for it. And now that name obviously is going to be whatever you're using, like whatever you're calling to. So you want to make sure that it makes sense.
Yeah.
So say for our example today, we're going to call it, I don't know, deaths, I think, because we're tracking deaths in a game. So you want to make sure that you make the proper storage name.
Yeah, so that if you see it, you know exactly what it's holding, and you're not kind of guessing at what kind of data is stuck in that storage.
So, it'd be like whatever your game name is or something like that. So for us, we're doing a cart game, so it'd be like the cart game one.
Yeah.
And then inside there, there'll be storage containers.
And then inside your containers, that's where you break it down to what is being held by each thing.
Exactly. So we'll make that. And there's some other options. You can select your location if that matters to you. I happen to be in the Eastern area.
Well, you might
want
to set up multiple as well, right?
You might want to
set up multiple. If your game is going to be global and it's worldwide, you might want to actually set them up, one on the West Coast, one on the East Coast of the U.S., then one over in Europe as well, right? And make sure that you have them kind of all set up.
Exactly. And then on the game side, it'll just know which one to push them to just in case.
Yeah, you just check the local.
And that'll save you some time as well. It'll speed it up a bit for people.
Exactly.
So you do that, and it's pretty much all the options you need to mess with. It's pretty simple stuff when it comes to that. It takes a few seconds to like once you click create, it takes a few seconds to do it.
It has to actually create it.
Yeah, and it's doing that on the Azure side, so that's fine. You wait for that, and then it's good. So then once you have that, you can open it up, and you'll see a bunch of options again. Like there's plenty of data in the Azure portal. It's insane. So you have your dashboard. You can look at your containers if you already have some, all that stuff. What you're looking for is just the containers. That's where you're going to be looking later on. Mm-hmm. We don't need that right now. For now, what we want to do is we want to save our key and so that we, when we're going to make our library or plugin or whatever you might be using it for, you need like a string key that's sort of your access point to get in, mm-hmm. and then the name that you just made for your storage.
Yeah. So instead of having like a username, password, and stuff like that, you have a string that you basically are going to pass along that allow
exactly.
you to have access, right? That's how we're, it's like the gated system.
Yeah, you're like talking to Azure and you're saying, I want to go into the cart game storage and I want to access this container. Here's my access code sort of thing.
Yeah.
So you'll get to a page, once you open up your storage account, you'll see there's all kinds of stuff. But at the bottom, you'll see where it says like manage keys. So you want to open that up. And in there, it'll have like a primary key and a secondary key. For our needs, we just need the primary key. Secondary key does the exact same thing, but that's something that you would give somebody else because it doesn't give them access to everything.
Okay.
So if you have other people working with you and you don't want them to have your whole Azure, access.
Or you had an app that had like more open access to
exactly.
stuff like that. You might want to be able to have people be able to create containers and stuff like that, but you might not want to be able to delete things.
Exactly.
Or change other things.
So you have different options there.
Very
For
cool.
our purposes, we're just using the primary
yeah.
today. But there's plenty of stuff there and there's all kinds of reading on it that you can do on there.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to grab that key and we're going to put it aside. We're going to save it for now. Because we're going to need it later. And we're going to remember what that storage account name that was we made. Okay. So in here, you can make like a container,
mm-hmm.
right? And you would just name like the container, say, I don't know, deaths or high scores, whatever you might be saving.
Whatever it is you're tracking.
Whatever it is you're tracking. The library that we're going to go be using later in just a moment, the Longboat one that I've created, it does that for you. And it does it when it creates the container. It does a few special things to it that we need to track stuff.
Okay.
Because one, like I said, blob storage doesn't have any structure,
mm-hmm.
and we don't really care about structure except for one thing. We need to know how many things are in there.
Yeah, it makes sense.
which is very important when it comes to code. It simplifies a lot of things if you can say like I want to do it this many times,
mm-hmm.
right? So that's important. So we're not going to create a container there, but that's how you would. You would go into containers, you click create container. And go from there.
Okay.
If you're just using
Azure. So if we wanted to do it by hand or
exactly.
if we weren't actually using your script.
If we weren't actually using mine, that's how you would do it.
Okay.
And go from there. And I mean if you guys are later on making your own stuff with Azure and not using mine, then this is the kind of stuff you would have to set up or you'd have to figure out your own way. Maybe again you'd want a bit more structure,
mm-hmm.
but not the structure I've given you. You want different structure.
Mm-hmm.
That's perfectly fine too. Yes, okay, so introducing the Longboat library. That's this is the one that I've made. It's a very simple library. I'm not gonna hail it for being like the greatest thing ever, but it is very useful. It's only 7 functions long.
Oh wow!
And we'll get to that in a moment. But those 7 functions you can use for a lot of different things.
Mm-hmm.
And when you combine them, you can do an awful lot. So it itself, as I mentioned before, is using the Azure storage SDK for C++, and it's using the C++ REST SDK codenamed Casablanca. So we are using it for storing location data. But that's not exactly, that's pretty much exactly what it's built for.
Mm-hmm.
But you could store other things, and when you're making your own libraries, your own plugins with Azure, you can have it store whatever you want. This is just the format that I've given it for this particular need, so that people can make simple heat maps.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, it only contains 7 functions, which are right here. So we need a function to connect.
Obviously.
That's the most important thing. And every time you talk to Azure, you have to connect. The connections, when you're working with the SDK, You can have a connection stay open for a certain amount of time. You can have like a continuation, mm-hmm. Which is what they call it. So you're going along and say, I want to push data to it. I would connect, then I would push data. If I want to pull the data back down, I would connect, then I'd pull data. If you want to push a lot of data, the connection will only stay open so long, so you have to connect, give it a continuation, and then push a bunch of data.
Yeah.
And then once it gets up to a point, it's like, oh, we're done. Oh, no, you got a continuation. Okay, we'll keep on going, sort of thing. So it's very particular in that. And when I was reading into this, because, you know, I wanted to get as much information as I could, Microsoft has them do that for security reasons, because you can't just have an open stream. And I thought that was good. I thought that was a very clever
idea.
Makes
sense, yes.
Yeah, it made perfect sense. So then the second function we have is just adding a container. As I said before, you can do it on there, but if you're using Longboat, you want to add a container through here, because it's going to do a few special things.
It gives you a lot of flexibility, too.
Yeah. And I'll show these functions off in a second, like the actual code behind them. Then we have the deleting of a container. Say you're done with one, you know, you no longer want to track that stat or whatever you were having in there. Deletes the whole container. Okay. You would add data to a container. Obviously, going to be one of the most important things for you. That's going to be in your. That's going to be one of the things that's actually in your game. That part of that function being used. Then you have to delete data from a container. Now this deletes all the data and leaves the structure that we've built for the container with the library, and it leaves the container itself.
So it leaves all the framework there. Just kind of removes all the innards.
So say you've collected all this data. You're done with it, and you can say, okay, wipe it, restart.
Okay.
Then you can use the same container and keep on going.
Yeah. That way you don't have to reinitialize it every time you want to make a new one. Right?
Exactly. And then we have the ability to get the containers from Azure, like what are our containers, what are they called? It'll give you that. And then you can get all the data from a container, which obviously is going to be the most important thing of what we're doing today, mm-hmm. so that we can review that data.
Yeah, if we put it in there, we want to be able to get it out.
Exactly. You know, you kind of want to review that data, exactly. So I can show that really quick. I have the...
Yeah, I'm kind of interested to see the code here.
So, like I said, I didn't C++.
Can you make that a little bit bigger, just so it's
can I make it? I can make that a little bit bigger. So we have the option.
Easier to read there.
Microsoft has given us the power. So I didn't C++. So we have the two files. We have the header file and we have the CPP file. So in the header file, when you're making a DLL, like a a linked library, right? You would have a few things. You have to declare it as such, and you depending on what you're running in, you'll have. Actually, this is scrolled over a bit, so we want to, there we go. So depending on what we're running in, we're running it in Unity for this purpose.
Mm-hmm.
So we have, like, you have to declare it as external, all that stuff. For us, we have...
And this is more of the setup for the Unity plugin than it
this is
the
setup for the Unity plugin
for
yeah.
your library.
Yeah, like this stuff is just so it give you sort of an idea of what's happening in the back end.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, when I call this function in Unity or whatever I'm using, what is it doing?
Mm-hmm.
Because all you're going to be doing is connect, put in a string.
Yeah.
But what's that string doing, right?
Exactly.
So these are our seven functions declared in the header. And that's just telling it, you know, it's saying this is the function for the Longboat lib, and it's going to take, like, character string, which is just a string, and then, like, a character string again.
Yeah. For the non-C++ programmers out there, the header basically describes what you're looking at. So
exactly.
You have, you know, all of your function names are in there. And then the body of the actual function is in the C++ file.
Exactly.
Right? So the reason, like, we're looking at the header is there's not a lot of extraneous code there for us to bother to look at. We can actually just see the functions and what they take, the arguments that they require.
Exactly. It's like a quick look.
Yeah.
And I'm glad you could articulate that because I had no clue what to say. So then we have the CPP file, which is where all the meat is.
Yeah.
So the connect function, as we talked about. Now, this is the connect function right here. It's not very big. It is kind of big if you think about it, all it's doing is connecting.
Mm-hmm.
But it has to do a few things, and it has to take a few things into account and then also check for errors.
Yeah.
Make sure, like, if it's not connecting, why isn't it connecting? It has to catch that and tell you why.
Yeah, which makes sense. When you're working on anything that's, like, connecting over the network or any multiplayer or anything like that, a lot of us game programmers, we get lazy. We don't put a lot of try catches in our code and stuff like that because we're just like, if it doesn't work, no big deal. We'll figure it out, you know.
Yeah, as we break go it, through, I'll fix it.
Yeah, we'll figure it out as a bug. But if you're working on network code, you can't be always sure what's going to happen out there on the network. You don't know, maybe a squirrel's chewing on the guy's internet line and suddenly he loses network connection.
Yeah. Right?
Things like that do happen and you have to be able to check and stuff like that. So always, always recommend that you have some sort of try catch situation in there.
And some programs, Unity, we'll use as an example because that's what I use it for.
Mm-hmm.
If they're using a plugin that doesn't have like a try catch or some sort of error catching, it might crash.
Oh yeah.
It might crash. And when it crashes hard. So you want to watch out for that. You can you know, if you do that, and I mean, I did it to myself.
Save yourself the headaches.
Yeah, yeah. I did it to myself. You'll lose data or you'll lose time if you didn't save it, you know, which you should be. You should always be saving. So there's that. So for this, all it does is it takes the information that we've given it on the Unity side or wherever we're pushing it from, and it builds our connection string, which is very important. And the connection string is, like I said, that big key. It's telling it what kind of protocol we're using, and then it's taking your account name, and then it's pushing it to Azure and saying, connect, please, through the REST SDK. Then it's going to actually do the, it's going to create the string, then it's going to push to it, and then it's going to check for a blob storage, which is what we have. And that's the storage name that we've given it. So that's the connect. It's very simple. You can see right here, like we said, it's trying to do all that, and if it can't, it's going to catch it and tell us why. So that's simple. So for the creating container, again, it's a very simple function. Most of these functions are only three lines. That's the great thing. It, like when you're using the Azure SDK, it's very, I found it very simple. Like the way they build it is, it's very encapsulated. Everything is just one thing. They don't have you writing like 10 lines of code just to do something simple like connect, which is nice.
Yeah.
And even when I went down to the REST level, it's still in like maybe four lines of code, which isn't too much.
I was actually surprised when I started digging through it too, how easy it was to use, and it's very accessible. It takes a lot of the heavy lifting and kind of extracts it away for you, so you're not, you know, digging so far deep into it that, you know, you're trying to get your gray matter wrapped around that and not actually solving your problem.
Exactly. And then 6 hours pass by and you're like, oh yes, I was dealing with the color of the car.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And hours of reading.
Yeah.
Okay, so this one, again, all it does is just call to the container. You've given it a name, and it's saying, is that there?
Does it exist?
Yeah. Is that there? No, it doesn't exist. Okay, so we're going to make that. And as I said before, we give it a bit of structure. So when we create a container, we're also going to create one block of data in there.
Okay.
And that block of data is the data count. As you can see right here, that's what I've called it, the data count. And that's just so it knows how much data is in there, not including itself.
It's our counter, so to speak.
It's our counter. So you can call to it and say, how much do we have? So again, that's fairly simple. And we just upload some text in there saying zero so that, like I said, it's excluding itself. And then we have the delete container. This is only two lines. It's calling and saying, I have a container name. Is it there? Yeah. Okay. We'll get rid of it.
Simple enough.
The retrieve containers. Okay. So this one, slightly more complicated. What it does is it calls up again and it says, I want all of the containers. I want you to bring them down. And it brings them down in a string. So right here we have sort of a string builder. And it goes through, as you can see, it'll be like, how many containers do we get? And then it goes through a for loop, and it sort of concatenates them on, right? And just like, just concatenates them on. I used the right word there. And it just puts them together. And then between each one, it'll put a hashtag. And that's just saying, that is a new one.
Your delimiter.
It's the delimiter. Yeah. Thank you for that word. It's the delimiter. It just goes through and says, there's one. Yeah. So that when you push that data back up to Unity or wherever you're using it, you know that I'm getting this long string, and this long string has a bunch of hashtags in it. Well, that's separating each of the ones I need.
Yeah, so when you parse it, you're going to chop it up the hashtags.
Exactly, you're going to chop it up the hashtags, which you'll see us do when we get to the Unity side. So now we have the creating of the data. So this one, a few more lines of code. So we have... it looks for the container that you've given it. Because in this one, you give it a container, the name of the blob that you want to name, that you're sending it, and the actual data that you're pushing to it. In our case, for this library, we use the same thing for both of those. But Azure requires that you have both of those.
Okay.
So for us, it makes it simple. And also, when you go to check on the Azure side, see that your data is there, you can't look at the data very easily. You have to actually download it and decode it and like open it up. But you can look at the name. So just as sort of a simple, hack or whatever you want to call it, it allows us to go to Azure, open it up, and see there's the data. And what's the data? There it is. Okay, so that's the right data. That's what I wanted to push.
Okay.
Without you having to download the data and then check the data, which
you usually
have to do.
Saves you a little bit of time, yeah.
Exactly. So that was a little sort of a shortcut that I found that I actually really liked. But you know, you can do it differently if you want, or if you want your data.
It works, right?
Exactly. And that is sort of a small security thing to keep in mind. If you do it that way, your data is not as secure, because the reason when you're putting the data in, it is locked, and that's why it's harder to get out. And you have to download the data with your key instead of just going to the website. But for our purposes, I didn't care.
Maybe that's something you want to do in your production, but then when you do your release, you're gonna turn that off, so to speak.
Exactly. Right? For my purposes, I didn't really care.
Because you want to be able to debug and everything, right, mm-hmm. and see if this is actually working. So you kind of wrote that in. It's more of a debug issue than anything else.
Yeah. No, I would say it's definitely a developer trick.
Yeah.
As opposed to anything else. So then we have the deleting of the data. So it literally just goes in and says, how much data do we have? Like I said before, we need to know. So it uses the data count and says, how much data is there? Oh, yeah, I just get rid of all. Mm-hmm. Just go through and just delete it all one by one. And that's pretty much the only way you could do that with Azure. That was one thing I ran into when I was like, there's got to be a better way to do this. But there wasn't, but there was talk about doing it better in the future. So I was glad to see that. I was like, you know.
Just deleting the entire storage container, you're basically having to step through and delete each little piece of data inside.
Yeah,
of it.
Like you can't tell Azure just to do it. You have to be like delete, then delete next, and delete next, delete next.
Yeah, it's an extra layer of security if you think about it, right? You're not going to be able to accidentally delete an entire container when you're trying to delete parts of the data.
True. Didn't think about it that way.
It's kind of a neat little gateway to have in front of you.
Yeah. But in their patch notes, they did talk about actually doing it in the future.
Yeah, because it makes sense there are certain circumstances where you're going to want to just delete the entire container, right? And having just a simple function makes sense.
But it's fine.
It was only
one for loop. It wasn't like 10,000 lines
of code. It's not like you're doing a bunch of development just to make that happen.
It still keeps our library very simple.
Yeah, yeah.
Library. That's not a library is not a word. So then we have list data. So this is the big one. This is what we want. So this is probably the most it's the last function. It's also the most complicated function we have here. So it goes through and it looks for the container that we've given it, and then it grabs that container and it creates, like I said before, the continuation key. Mm-hmm. Because depending on if you have like three pieces of data in there, it's going to take no time at all. It doesn't care. It's going to give you that right away. Mm-hmm. But if you have, say, I don't know, 150,000 pieces of data in there, or 20 million, or I think I figured it could hold up to like 24 billion, whatever it was.
It's quite a large number.
A large number. But it's gonna take a long time to download that, because when you're doing this, you're actually downloading the data from Azure, right?
Okay.
So you got to keep that in mind. Whenever you're doing this, you have to give it an allotment of time. You can't just click the button and expect it's going to be there. Like, it's just like downloading a file.
Expect some latency.
Expect some time, which is understandable, I think. Mm-hmm. Because just like any data, you're going to download it.
Anytime you're working with anything on the network, you should expect some sort of latency.
Exactly. So right here, we then, we give it size. I say, 32 bits mm-hmm. per data. That gives us our 30 string, that gives us our string for our vector, how big it can be. I've limited it for this purpose to a precision of 10 decimal places.
Oh, okay.
Or was it 10? Yeah, I think it was 10.
That's pretty accurate for what you're doing.
Yeah. So I was like, if you need more than that, you can rewrite this. That's all I need. I didn't even need that much. So so I went and did that. So it's going to give us back a blob item iterator. And that blob item iterator is literally, this is your stuff. Mm-hmm. This is the thing that's going to move through. We're going to use that to move through all of the data that it just gave us. And just like we did before, and we're going to check the data count so we know how far to go and stuff like that. But just like we did before, we're going to separate that data when we build the string, because right here, another, just a string builder.
Yeah.
It's basically putting every character from our data into a character array.
Okay.
Because that's more universal than an actual string.
Yeah. Strings vary from Mac to Linux to whatever, right, to Windows.
So I keep to the string character array that more people can use this, because I wanted to make sure that everybody could sort of at least get the idea of what's going on. So it builds that one character at a time, and then when it gets to the end of a piece of data, puts a hashtag again for you, just like we did before. So that on our other side, we know data, hashtag, all the way through, so we can decode that very easily. But that's all it does. It's just a little bit of a string builder.
It's simple, but it's very functional, right? And with just that limited amount of functions, you can actually build on them and do some pretty amazing stuff. Right?
Exactly. Those seven functions together they did everything I needed, and I'm sure people will find out ways to use them that I didn't figure out.
Yeah. And we should point out that this is all open source, too, right?
It is all open source, yeah. Feel free to rip it apart.
Yeah. Add whatever you want. And
tell me where I did something wrong. I love to hear about that. Every developer does, right?
Oh, yeah.
Show me your improvements. I would love to see that. Yeah. Show us your improvements. That's great.
Yeah, so you can put pull requests in there, and if there's something that because I'm kind of helping you curate it as well, if we see anything that's very, very interesting or something that should be added, by all means, we'll put it in there.
Yeah, it's all up on GitHub, right? They can go up there, they can fork it and pull it down, get their own version of it, mess around with it.
The link is github.com/scruffyfern/longboat.
/longboat, yeah. Yeah, and we'll show that in a
minute. You got it in a slide anyway, I'm sure.
Yeah, I got it in a slide somewhere. So, yeah, that's the library. That's the library in a large nutshell. So then going back to our presentation here, what do we got? Okay, so yeah, connecting Longboat to Unity.
Okay, so now that we have the library, we understand how it works, how we're passing our data through it, up into Azure and stuff, we need to put it in a game so we can actually kind of see what's what, right?
Exactly. So on that, there it is, GitHub. Mm-hmm. We've provided some DLLs for you that you're going to need. We've provided the Longboat DLL. You're going to need the REST SDK DLL, and you're going to need the Azure Storage SDK.
So you don't actually have to build this on your own. We already have the versions there that you can just drag and drop into Unity.
Yeah, if you just want to use Longboat, or if you just want to mess around with this in Unity, then we've given you that stuff. But obviously, you can go ahead and do whatever you want with the actual code because it's available
to
you.
Want, yeah.
So yeah, it's just there. There's three DLLs, as I mentioned. Yeah, that's it. And there's plenty of documentation. Oh, didn't mean to click that link, but the link works. That's good to know. I didn't know that. So there's plenty of documentation on making plugins and things like that for Unity if you want to make your own.
Yeah.
Obviously, you can use Longboat maybe as a stepping stone and see what I did there and how to do a few things. And I'll also mention it later. I have a link to a really good tutorial from this nice gentleman. That shows you how, like, all the different things you might need to do for
a you passed that one along to me. I was amazed. You did really well on that one.
So, I mean, that is very good, too. Mm-hmm. Just like everybody else that might be watching, you guys are learning from this, maybe. I do the same thing. I go on the internet, see what I can find, see how people are doing stuff.
It never ends, right? As a developer, you're always learning new things, right?
Yeah, I didn't just know this.
Yeah. If you're standing still, you're going in the wrong direction.
Exactly. So you go out there and you find it. So right here we have us with our DLLs. So mm-hmm. I'll just quickly jump over to the net here, and I'll show here is the Longboat on GitHub, as I said. It's got some quick instructions to get you started, telling you what to install and stuff like that. But what we want is we want the releases. And this is the first release, obviously version 1.0. Mm-hmm. So we have these three DLLs right here. You're going to want to click, and I'll just do that to show, download. We're not going to finish it. And it'll just download the DLL. You're going to grab those, and you're going to go over to Unity.
Okay.
And in Unity, you're going to want to put those in a plugins folder. If your project doesn't have a plugins folder, you can make one. Just make it plugins with a capital P.
Yeah.
Simple stuff.
And that's important because that's where Unity looks for those files in order to use them. If you put them somewhere else, it's not going to work.
Yes, because as far as Unity is concerned, when we're getting down to the C# side of this, it's going to be looking there. And when you're calling, I'm using this DLL, it's going to be like, where is it if you don't have it in that specific folder? We're just going to take them over, and you'll do something simple. It's like this. You'll do import new asset, find where you downloaded it to, and then it's there. Mm-hmm. Simple as that. Click and drag might work, too.
Yeah, you can drag them in as well. And drop
I want to say that might work, but if it doesn't, right-click, import asset.
Yeah.
Works every time. So then you get those three. So right there we have our REST SDK, we have our Longboat DLL, and we have our, it says WA storage, but that's just the code name for the Azure SDK one. So we have those. And that's the first step to getting it all hooked up to Unity, which I just demoed.
Yeah.
It's perfect. So then we're going to try using that.
Okay.
And we want to make sure we're on the right path. We want to make sure that we got the DLLs in there, and they are there, and they're working.
Yeah, so that when we call from our scripts, that everything is all connected, and we're not having any issues.
Yes, exactly. So what I've done is I've made a small script that tests that connection and sees everything working.
Oh, very cool.
You can see here, it's very small. It's not very big. It only has a connect, as we can see there, and it's got creating a container. So, we're going to need a container for later, so why don't we try to create that container right now with our test? So I'm going to go back to Unity, and I've got a scene that I've created called Test on Track, because that's where we're testing to make sure we're still on track. You're going to want to, it's a very...
Love the naming conventions.
Oh, yeah.
Very spot on.
Very spot on. That's just so I can remember what it was for. If I name it something weird, I'm not going to know. So like you can see, it's a very simple scene. There's nothing physically here. All we have is this one object called Test Script Object, and it's got our Test on Track script. So I'm going to, I don't know why I clicked on that. I'm going to open that up in Visual Studios. That'll take a few seconds. But like I said, it's just a very simple script. All you're gonna have to have with it is your key that we saved before, the name of your storage account that we saved before. Like we write that down or Notepad or something. And then just a good name for whatever container you want. For us, I think for our purposes, I named it Deaths, which is morbid, but it fits a naming convention, like you said. So that's just doing its thing. So we go over to the scripts. Where did I put it now? Ah, analytics. So we're going to open up the script. And so I already have it open. Movie Magic.
Yeah, we got the cooked turkey. We're pulling them out of the oven here and just, yep, done.
Exactly. So as I mentioned before, it's very simple. We have, let's open that up. So you'll sometimes have a few things that you have to do. This we don't have to do right now, but I just wanted to point it out, mm-hmm. depending on what platform you're using. So this is showing as iPhone and Xbox 360.
So you're showing preprocessor directives that basically cut code out based on what platform it is.
Exactly.
So if it matches the platform of Unity iPhone or Unity Xbox 360, you run that code. If it doesn't, you run the code underneath of it.
Exactly. And those are, yeah, it more or less just pertains to iPhone now because the Xbox 360, you might be developing for it, I guess, but more likely you might be doing Xbox One, hopefully. Hopefully. Okay, so, but for us, all we need is these ones down here, so we can close after. So we're saying we're importing, okay, well, actually, first, I should start at the beginning. This is the most important thing you'll need, and nobody, like, I had to find that. I didn't know where that was. Like, I didn't know what that was.
That gives you the ability to talk to external libraries.
Exactly. It gives you the ability to talk to external libraries. So that's the most important thing. It's the interrupt services.
So if you're having a bunch of errors right off at the beginning, make sure you've got that using statement in there.
That was my issue. Yeah. I ran into that twice. Okay, so then after we have that in there, we can then talk to the libraries. So we're saying DLL import, and then this it's called Longboat. That's the name of the DLL file, just Longboat. Mm-hmm. And then there's a .dll after that. So we're going to call it that. And it's again, it's going to use this to look into the plugins folder for that. That's why that was important back then. And then one thing that you're probably not used to doing if you only use C#, you have to declare your functions, mm-hmm. which you never usually have to do, right? So here we are. We're declaring it's going to be a private. That's what it is in there. It's a static external. That's it's going into the external. And it's going to return us a Boolean, right? So on this side, remember on that side we were using a character array.
Yes.
Because it was more universal. On this side, we're just going to look at that as a string. And that's all it is. If you think of what a string is, it's just an array of characters, right?
Yes.
So when it passes that back to us, it's perfectly fine.
Yeah.
So we're saying we're going to give you a string, we're going to give you another string. And this one is the storage account, as I mentioned before, we had to save, and our connection key, which we saved from before. And then for this test also, we're going to use the create container, which, again, does all that same stuff.
So for each one that we're going to, for each function that we want to use inside of the library, we have to declare it as such.
Exactly. So if you want to use all seven, you're going to want to declare all seven.
Okay.
Yeah. And you'll see here that they're returning a Boolean. Mm-hmm. We'll get to that in a second. But pretty much all those functions in that library return a Boolean, except for the ones that are actually returning data to you. And that's just to let you know that they did what they're supposed to do.
I was going to say, it's for error checking more or less.
It's for error checking more or less in Unity. Because when you're in Unity and you want to do that, you can't jump into the code of the DLL.
Yeah.
It won't let you debug into it. So this more or less just like sort of a Unity workaround to get you knowing that things are working properly.
Yeah, it's always a good idea to check to make sure that whatever function you fired off, especially when you're calling to an external library, comes back and says, yeah, what you asked me to do, I went and did it. I didn't, just forget.
Yeah, exactly. Thing, right? Exactly. Yeah. So this one we're just going to pass in the name of the container of our choice. Mm-hmm. So getting into the meat of that, right here, I've declared a string, and that string is test boat. That's whatever I named my container. And then this is the long, whatever, nonsense key for that for that particular storage account.
Which he's going to change after this video now that he's...
No, I don't use it.
Oh, you don't use it?
That's non-existent.
Okay.
So it doesn't matter. And if somebody wants to push something there, it doesn't really affect me. fun. Then we just have a start function because we're just going to run it and it's going to do it and we're going to be done. Mm-hmm. So first thing we're going to do is I've put it in debug logs so that we can get that Boolean that we talked about, so we know that it happened. So I just did debug log connected, and then I concatenated on there the actual function, which I'm passing in the account name and the connection key that we just saved up there.
So the result will spit out in the debug log and say
it'll say
true
connected,
or
true or false.
Yeah.
And you want to see connected true.
Yeah, obviously.
And then for the next one, again, it'll say container created, true. And so right here, we're calling the function container created. We're passing in the string. I've called it deaths, for whatever reason. Yours could be named anything depending on what you want to just try to keep naming conventions. And it's worth mentioning here that with Azure, there is specific naming structures. Mm-hmm. You can't use underscores ever.
Okay.
Because I guess on their side, they use that for other things that are very important. You can't use capitals. It'll okay. it'll err on capitals. But yeah, pretty much everything is fine. And you want to keep it to under 32 characters.
Can you do alphanumeric? Can you have
you can
special characters like hashtags?
As long as it's not an underscore.
Okay.
As long as it's not an underscore. I haven't found anything else that works. And when I looked at their naming conventions, there's the only two things it mentions.
Okay.
Also, you got to keep it under 32 characters long. But, I mean, I don't... That's
if
a lot
you're
of characters.
Naming, yeah, if you're naming your container more than 32 characters, you might want to rethink your naming convention.
Yeah, like Raxacalica Palabatorius or something.
Yeah, that's just that's a little much. Yeah.
Massive.
Yeah. And don't name them something like, you know, Analytics 1. That means nothing to you know, an outside coder. So make sure you try to keep them something.
Especially if you're working with other people, naming conventions are important. If it's just you can name it P26H. And you're
he's
like,
kind of bringing
exactly
this up because when we were working on a project recently, we had a discussion on naming conventions and
butting horns and all
that. Yeah, we were butting horns on that one.
but yeah, it's important to know what you're working with. Yeah. So that's simple two functions. We're going to go back over to Unity really quick. We're going to run this. I'm not going to run it because I've already done that. Just for, you know, the movie magic's sake. But you would just run it. Actually, you know what? Let's see. I'll run it and see what happens. And
you're brave.
it did that, so I'm going to pause. Yeah, there.
Because right, maximize, we couldn't see.
True and true. Okay,
oh, awesome.
So we're good.
So it worked.
Yeah, it worked. And what it did was it probably just deleted something else. I don't know. Mm-hmm. It's all good. But like I said, that's not something I really use anymore, so it's fine. So yeah, that's what you want to see, this right here. The true and the true. That's what you're looking for.
So that's a very, very simple example of how you can use this library that you've created to connect and stuff like that. So I guess the next step is you're going to want to show us something a little bit more detailed on how it worked with the cart.
Yeah. Yeah, we can show that. But remember, if you named it properly, then you have this container for things that we're going to do
exactly,
in a few
right.
moments. We don't have to go make another container, which I'll touch on again if you need it. Okay, so going back to our glorious presentation. We have, yep, oh, I already explained that. Mm-hmm. Awesome. And that's what you want to see, as I mentioned
before.
That's
your airport, yeah.
And here we are. Back to the Azure portal. So this is a very simple way to make sure that it actually worked if you don't trust the true, you know. We can open up our...
It's always a good idea to double check it, right, to go to the source and
exactly.
see where you're, you know, is it actually stored there or did I get a false positive?
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I'm going to go open up Azure. And this is, like I said before, you would make an account here or whatnot. At this point, you've made an account, hopefully, and you'd be signed in. So up here at the top, you'll see Portal. Mm-hmm. Click on that. There also is a new portal that you guys are putting out.
Yeah, I love the new portal. It's so fancy looking.
I do, too. I'm using this one just because this is the one that is presented
it's
to them on the
default,
site.
It's by default, right, yeah.
So I want to make sure that that's the one that they're seeing, right? Mm-hmm. As you can see, I have some stuff here. It's all test stuff, so I don't care if you know about it. so we made that in Test Boat. So we're going to go into Test Boat. Let's get back to the meeting. We click on storages on the side. Mine came up as that because it was already done.
You had already selected it last time you were in there.
Then you would have them. I have one called Bamalam, apparently. so I'm going to go into Test Boat. And then at the top, you'll see they have all the different options. You can look at your dashboard. It'll show you all the data that's going in and out. This is also somewhere where you can see, like, okay, well, I'm going to be charged money this month or something.
Yeah, if you wanted to monitor it and see, like, actually what's happening at a, you know,
You can configure options, all kinds of stuff. There's plenty of options here. I can't even go through them all. Then we've got deaths. That's the one we're using. And, so now you know it's there.
It exists.
It was created. If we open this up, it's already got data in there. And that's how you would check for data if you wanted to check.
If you were actually passing data into that desk, which we didn't do in that example.
Yeah, we didn't.
But if we had, that's where you would see it.
Yeah. And we're going to come to that because there is a step in the presentation where I would have done that on purpose instead of just clicking on it. Like a madman. Okay, so going back here then. So we've checked. I've showed you that.
Mm-hmm.
So the next step is data collection and data presentation, as you were saying.
Yeah.
We do that in a game.
Because to see what it actually looks like when you're passing real data in and you're not just creating containers, mm-hmm. right? We want to see the visualization of our data.
Yeah. So I have we make like a scene, you know, something like that. You need some way to pull the data, somewhere to pull the data.
Mm-hmm.
For me, what I've done is I've made a scene in my Unity project. It could be your game. It could be a whole other Unity project that you've made specifically just for pulling data down from your stuff. Whatever you're doing, if you're not using Unity, maybe you got something else.
Yeah, this scene that you created isn't something that you're going to give to the production or the release version of
You wouldn't give that
this
to the
is
release
only,
version.
This is only on
this
your
just,
end.
This is just for you. You can build it out so that you can just click on that whenever you want to.
Yeah.
It's very simple. But as you can see, we have an arena style here from our cart game.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a simple scene. I've got, you know, a little meter on the side that is nonsensical. And it just says if it's red, then it's lots of damage or lots of deaths. And if it's blue, then there's very few deaths.
Yeah, it's our legend to let us know what the colors actually mean when we're looking at them.
Exactly. Just in case I didn't know or I forget, which I hopefully that doesn't happen. Then we have a few simple things. We have the ability to create a container here, if you didn't do it already. And you have the ability to create the heat map. And then, as you can see, you have a little input area where you put the name in of whatever you want to create. Stick to those naming conventions again. And then when you're creating a heat map, you're telling it which container to pull up.
Yeah.
So, like, if you make one called deaths in the create, you would then type deaths in the create heat map to pull
it
up.
And it'll pull all the data from that.
Yeah, and we'll go into that in more detail. And then on the right, you can see that we have a bit of an example of a heat map with some sparse data around with red and yellow. And that means that those are sort of the epicenters of where damage was happening. Yeah, that's basically it.
Yeah, it's pretty self-explanatory,
it's
right?
It's pretty self-explanatory.
If you've ever watched, like you said, the news and seen the weather reports and the accumulated rainfall in a certain area, you'll see like the graph that has a different color, and you know that's basically all we're doing here. It's a heat map.
And I present it in a bit different way. Like, I'm not presenting it in like blobby, you know, colors.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm presenting it with like little colored spheres.
Yeah.
But you can do it however you want.
Well, you could have a blend from through the different colors, and it would kind
exactly.
of like, you know, give you kind of like a nice little pattern.
And there's plenty of different ways to do it. Like the way I've done it was sort of a quick, simple way of doing it.
Mm-hmm.
But again, when you guys are messing around with this, I would love to see what you guys do, because there was different ways I do it. For another project I have, I do it with a Voronoi pattern.
Oh, okay.
Right? So it goes through and it creates the sections of the Voronoi pattern based on stuff, and then it colors them as it goes. And it looks really cool, and it's really nice in 3D. But it wasn't done, so I didn't want to show it here. It's very broken. But yes, there's plenty of ways to do it, and I'm very excited to see what you guys do for that. So what we need to do to accomplish that goal of getting to the heat map is we need to connect to Azure, as we've said. And we'll probably connect to it many times. We need to create a metric to track, which we already did, maybe. If you haven't already, like I said, we can use that scene to do it. And that was our deaths. We're going to push the data from the actual game, and we're going to retrieve that data back in our scene, and we're going to present the data visually. And I'll show you how I do all that stuff, too.
Very cool.
My bad.
All good.
So data collection. Okay, so in your game, wherever it is, whatever game, we're using, like I said, the cart game, which I believe is available to people?
Yes, we have it up on the GitHub, I believe.
Okay, so if you want to use this example, you can go find it.
Yeah.
And I have some links, I think, that I can provide for that.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, we need our storage account name. We need our key. We need the declarations of our functions in whatever code we're doing it in. And we need, in that same project, we need to have the DLLs so that we can access them in the plugins folder. All those things we talked about already. So you can see here that I made a simple simple function called upload location, and it calls that when a player dies in the game, when the car dies. And all it does is quickly build a string, because all the data we're passing in is string, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then it's doing whatever it has to do on that side. So we build a quick string where it's taking the transform position of the X, turning into a string, and then it's concatenating that together with the X, the Y, and the Z all together into one string, and then it's passing that in. So we're going to create that string, we're going to connect with the account name and the connection key, and then we're going to say, I want to put it in my deaths container.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like I said before, it takes a data name and a data. I've made them both the same, as I mentioned before. But you could actually put the data name, you could put like, deaths one or deaths in this or whatever, so that it's more tracking.
If you were trying to track multiple things.
Yeah. It all depends on what you want to do. This is just for the example's purpose. So I just put death location.
Mm-hmm. So then, three lines of code basically is all that takes.
Exactly. It's not. Yeah, that's one line broken up. And it takes it as a vector.
Mm-hmm.
As you can see, it builds a string, makes it into a vector 3. So that's number, comma. That's the one it is.
Yeah.
Number, comma, sort of thing. And then number again. And then it connects to Azure and it pushes up. So once we've created that data, which we're actually going to go into the game and show like that code,
mm-hmm.
where I would put it. But once we've done that, we want to see that the data has actually been pushed to Azure. You know, make sure that's working.
Mm-hmm.
So it's always good to double check. As I did it before,
yeah.
you would just go in again to your Azure portal. You click on your storages. Go. I'm here in my test boat. Whatever one you're using. I click on deaths, it opens it up, and you have your data. I have a couple pages of data here that I think I randomly made one day. I think it's like 27 pages or something like that.
Oh, wow.
But you can see that
Yeah, it has a location.
Yeah, I called it location. Mm-hmm. We're going to show that. I actually named it location, and then gave it, its data. So yeah, it's a power piece of data, and those are all vector threes.
Yeah.
So you got your x, y, and z, and this is the name, as I was saying before. If you don't have the name as the same thing as the data, this would just be whatever you want it to be. And then in this link right here is the download of
the
that
actual
specific data.
So that's what you were talking about, your security thing,
your security.
Right? Like, you're basically putting the data that you're storing in the name so that for you, debugging, it's easier. But if you were to, say, make this like an actual production
and push this out,
not the best move.
Yeah, if you're wanting to do this and make, like, you know, your monies and all that stuff, do a Kickstarter, I don't know what you want to do. But you want to have a bit more security. Me, you guys can see everything you want. I don't care. I have nothing to hide.
You've left it very verbose.
Very verbose. Going along. So I'm going to open up the game here. Yeah, we're going to go and we're going to open up, you know, whatever scene we have. We have a game. We're in our project for Smashing Carts, a little cart game. As I said, some of you might know it. Some of you might not. If not, it's the greatest game in the world.
not quite, but.
The greatest unfinished game in the world. But someday it'll be finished and you'll be able to see that. But it's like I said before, it's all available to you. So you can go into this code yourself. You can see all the terrible things we did and, you know, tell us we're messing stuff up.
Yeah, be like, wow, why did you do it that way?
Exactly.
We don't mind. We love to hear that feedback.
Oh, so. I love it. I love when people tell me I'm wrong. Nothing makes me happier. I wake up in the morning, I'm like, who's going to tell me I'm wrong today?
I think he's kind of pulling your chain a little bit there.
Yeah, I'm definitely pulling my chain. but still, if I'm wrong, I like to know about it. So we'll open up our, we have a bunch of files in there, but we'll open up our cart file. Mm-hmm. And as you can see at the top of the cart file, we've brought in and we've used the interop services. Mm-hmm. Important whenever you're using this again. We've saved our connection string and our account and our name, our storage name. And then we're using two functions in here, so we've declared those. We've got the connect and we've got the create data.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then going down, where is it? It's called upload data. I believe it's at the bottom. It is. Okay, so upload data, as I showed you in the slide, you're just going to call this wherever you need it. In here, we call it on death, so the car dies. Mm-hmm. And then says, do this, and then it goes through whatever it has to do, like changes your scene and all that stuff. So very simple. Obviously, you're going to put that wherever you need it to be.
Yeah.
But for our purposes, it's right there.
It fit nicely there. You might actually want to move that out into its own separate section.
Yeah, you might have, in your project, you might have a whole, your own section library or its own file just for dealing with
and
all that stuff.
And you can obscure some of the stuff. Like, right there, we have our key in plain text.
Yeah.
Which may or may not be a great thing. So you might want to do something along the lines of obscure that a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, like, we're not showing you production quality code
here.
We're basically just showing you how everything kind of works.
Yeah.
To give the general gist
of
it.
This is how, because I just want to make sure that people know how to use Azure and see how simple it is. Because it is very simple.
It is very, very simple.
And I was very surprised when you guys came to me with this. I was like, oh, man, I learned a whole new thing, and it's going to be really hard, and it's Azure, and I don't know anything about it, and nobody really knows anything about it. Well, it turns out there's people that know stuff about
that.
and they were, you know, pretty helpful. They have blogs and all kinds of stuff.
Oh, it goes back to why we're doing this whole Codename Goa thing.
Code
right?
Name
we're trying
Goa.
To make sure that everybody gets the education.
People need to know. People
need
to know
that it's out there and how easy it is.
Yeah, and so I figured that out, and I was like, wow, this is, and everything just went smoothly. And I was like, okay, well, I'll hit a roadblock, I'll got through it. And I was surprised at that. So I was pretty happy. And I hope you guys have the
That's
same.
That's good feedback. I like to hear that, actually.
Yeah. No, I hope you guys have a similar experience. But if you don't, I mean, like I said, on the GitHub and all that stuff, and I'm sure information for Mickey.
Yeah, you can reach out to us if you have any issues with it.
If you reach out, I will answer.
Yeah. If you find issues, make sure you report them, things like that.
Nothing.
As well.
Yeah. If you find issues, you can report them on the GitHub.
Yeah.
Because it is public and it is open source, and you know, can push your own stuff to it. But okay, so that's what's going to happen in the game when you play it. We're not going to do that because we need multiple people. And
It would take too long to actually
get the demo. But we've actually got the data already. As you saw before, we have death data.
Yeah, we were playing around smashing into each other a little bit there so we could get some data.
So we're going to move on then, and that would be presenting the data.
Okay.
And this is the meat and potatoes. This is why we're here. So, again, we have our scene that we made, and this is just the elements that I've created. Like, as I said, we have the button, we have the input field, we have the button, we have the input field. I made a small little cheesy legend, and you're gonna. I put it on a camera facing down at my arena, so you can get sort of the full effect. For whatever game you have, it might be different. You might have a side scroller.
Yeah.
You might have like a whole open world, And you're gonna have to you're gonna have your own little hurdles in finding out how you can show that data, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I was lucky enough to
it's
have a small area.
It's gonna be different for every implementation.
It will be different for every implementation. And this is also a flat plane. The longboat system that I created was it's using vector threes, right? So it can be ups and downs.
I was gonna say you're using a vector three, so you're actually in 3D space. So those spheres that you're creating are actually floating in 3D space.
Yeah.
So if you wanted to, you could make the camera free float and be able to actually move around and see.
And remind me, I have a picture of a 3D heat map that I made. This one's just using a top down 2D.
Yeah.
But I've got a picture of a 3D one. It actually looks really.
Yeah, I'd love to see that actually, because you know.
Okay. Well, I'll show that when I get the heat map.
Data art, if you will.
It is data art. Yeah. That's why I kept the picture around. It looks really nice. So yeah, so it's going to go in, and it has a few little things. We're going to open that script in a moment.
Mm-hmm.
But it's got pretty much just two things. It creates a container button, which we've done before. It connects, creates the container, and then that's it.
Yeah.
And then the other one, it's going to create the heat map. It goes through a process of getting the data, decoding the data because of all the hashtags I was telling you about.
And you can see the code there. It's really, really simple.
It's really simple. There's some more in there.
Yeah.
But that is basically the process. Those are the steps that you take whenever you're making the heat map.
Yeah.
And it's important to decode the data, place all my spheres that I made in the world, calculate the densities of stuff, how far they are away. And I'll just mention on that a bit. My heat map is very simple because I wanted something presentable within the time period that I was given.
Yeah.
But heat mapping is a huge school of study.
Oh, the algorithms that go into determining how to actually represent that data is huge. Like, in fact, you can get master degrees and PhDs in that stuff.
I did some big reading on this, and then I was just like, wow, I wish that I was as smart as half these people. But it's very cool stuff. Very cool stuff.
But you made a simplified version of it anyway.
Yeah, and the math behind it, if you're interested, because some people they don't know what how do I do heat map? Like the math you're looking for, it's called data estimation.
Yeah,
and density estimation. Those are the two things you want, and it's going to estimate how things, because with this type of math, nothing is actually exact. Whenever you see the weather network heat maps,
it's an approximation.
It's an approximation of what's going on.
Yeah.
Because I guess they don't have the ability to hammer that down. But that's fine, because like I said, there's whole schools of study on it. People are getting paid a lot more than me. So we have created the container before, but if you haven't, you can go into your scene that you just made, and you can create the container that way, or go back to the test on track, create your container that way. However you want to do it, just make sure the container created. If you're using Longboat for the presentation, if you're using Longboat, you create the container through Longboat, because as I said before, it adds a bit of structure.
Yeah.
And then you can check again, see if your container's made, all that stuff. Okay, so presenting the data. We're going to run that heat map, we're going to run that scene, which I'm going to run in just a moment, and then we're going to type in deaths, and this type of thing is going to pop up.
Okay.
So here we go.
Yeah, let's take a look at that.
Let's go over here. We're going to open our analytics scene is what I called it. Very simple. As you can see, the legend, all the stuff, just like you saw in the picture. I'll run the scene. And this will give you an idea, of how, because like I said before, when you hit create, it's then going over to Azure and saying, give me your data, and that takes time.
You want to make it full screen just so we can see it really well?
I will make that full screen because I can barely see it. So there's full screen. You go over here. Deaths is what we called it. It'll just error if you do that wrong. Like it won't crash, but it'll tell you like that's nothing.
That
to me.
Doesn't exist.
It doesn't mean anything to me. So I'll create heat map. As you can see, freezes up a bit. That's it doing all its work. It's grabbing the data from Azure right now. It's got like I said, 27 pages of data or whatever like that was. So it's going to take probably about 10.
You could put a loading
seconds.
Process or something in there, right?
You could put a loading process.
You know that you're not hung up.
Yeah, no.
But
you,
in this case, it wasn't really necessary.
Yeah, no, it definitely wasn't necessary. But for our purposes, we'll just sit there with a blank screen and look at each other for a while.
Yeah.
Takes 10 or 20 seconds, and then you have the result. So as you can see, this is a very sparse heat map. There's not a lot of data there, so there's not a lot of colors.
Yeah.
So it's basically just showing the center points, like this yellow area in the middle here, that's a center point of data. These red ones over here, that's sort of center point off to that side, that sort of thing. Very
it's
simple.
It's an approximation of where the collisions have happened
exactly.
In groupings, too.
In
right?
Groupings.
We're seeing groupings of collisions, not just a single collision.
Yeah. So you can see some people crashing in the walls.
Yeah.
You know, some bad stuff happened.
That was probably me.
It was probably, yeah, I do it, too. but yeah, very simple. And you can have a scene like that whipped up in It took me, 10 minutes, so we'll say 5 minutes for everybody else here.
Yeah.
It didn't take long.
it's pretty amazing, honestly, going through it and actually seeing it work. It's amazing, like you said, how easy it was to get up and running with Azure. And it's a great note here that you didn't really know anything about Azure walking into this, right? You had some experience with networking and stuff in the past, but nothing, you know, with trying to build an analytics systems in the cloud, and you were able to pull this off and
yeah, very like short I didn't order, so. I didn't have a whole lot of experience using cloud stuff, so mm-hmm. I was interested myself. I was like, I'm gonna learn something here. Mm-hmm. Hopefully, I can get it done on time. But I learned a lot. I learned it's not that hard.
No,
and coming from me, I'm a novice when it comes to some things. Like we said, I didn't know what that was even.
And I think one of the things that a lot of us game developers do is we get kind of ingrained in what we know, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I know game mechanics, so I focus on game mechanics. And then when you see something like this outside of it, you think, oh, that's too complicated. I don't
want
to think about that, right? Yeah. But then when you actually dive into it, it's pretty mind-blowing how easy things are, right? Especially because you're building off of knowledge that you already have. If
exactly.
You can code anything. I've said that numerous times, right? Game developers aren't just game developers. They're programmers. And if you want to build apps, go build apps. You want to build websites, go build websites.
Exactly. So, I mean, anything you want. Like, if you see something and you think, oh, that'll be too complicated, just think, it might be too complicated at first.
Yeah.
But you'll quickly pick it up and you'll be like, oh, I'm a magician.
Yeah, and I'm sure you've learned a lot of skills from this that you're going to take back into your everyday
yes.
coding. So.
Yes, and I plan to, you know, continue on doing some more stuff with Longboat, making sure it's better than it is now and stuff like that. And
so before we wrap up, can we see that really cool picture of...
Yeah, no, I got a few more things to say, but I will show that picture right now. So that was like a 2D heat map. Thing. I've got a 3D one. I believe it's on my desktop. I'm just going to close some things. There we go. I will show the desktop. There it is. Okay, so this is a picture. It's just a simple...
So this is what you... I remember you rendered this without the scene. You were just like, I just want to see where the data is in a 3D space.
Yeah, I was just like, where's the data in 3D space?
Yeah, I remember you shot that over to me on Skype, and I was like, that's art.
and what I've done there in the code, which I'm going to show you in a second, is... I base the layer of the object too. So, as you can see, some of these things are really far away, and some of them are very close. That mm-hmm. way, that gives
you get
the
that
depth.
3D depth. Yeah,
exactly. But then the heat is the red thing. Like the redder it is, the more important it is. So you have that show up on a last draw layer, right? Mm-hmm. So that it appears first. Yeah. So even though there's a little red one in the middle, it's pretty small.
And again, this goes back to, like, you're going to implement this however you want. You might want to do, like you said, like the blending pattern. You might want to use spheres. You might want to use anything. But the point is, you can represent your data in visual ways, which is better for us humans to understand.
Exactly. So, yeah, there's that. So as I was mentioning before, I would, let's go to the next slide. That was that demo, yep. So things to consider mm-hmm. when you're dealing with this type of stuff. So you want to keep track of how much data you're sending. When you are sending the data, as I said, latency, it all matters. You got to think of your user's internet connection, not just yours. If they have an internet connection in your code, make sure that it's checking.
Yeah.
Because if it doesn't, then it's just going to...
Yeah, that's one mistake I think a lot of newbies do when they hit the networking thing. They forgot to check to see if that person's actually connected to any network before they run the code.
Exactly. So you want to see, like, are they connected to the internet? Okay, so we can do this.
Yeah.
So then it pushes up the data. If the data is, like, and that's one of the reasons I limited how big, how precise the point could be for the mm-hmm. depth, is because I didn't want to send, like, a billion length string over.
And you probably could have got away with 2 decimal points.
I probably could have got away with 2 decimal points, but it all depends on you guys,
on
like how precise you want that.
Say,
maybe
yeah.
you're dealing with very small things, maybe you're dealing with very big things.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's up to you. But I was like, I'll keep it to this because I'm definitely not going to need any more.
Well, and you got to think about mobile users too. They have some, you know, here in Canada, we have a cap on how much bandwidth we get a month, right?
Exactly.
And you don't want to be passing around gigabytes of data to do this, right?
Exactly.
Just for fun. Exactly. So try to limit it and try to only pass data that needs to be passed. Like if it's new, pass it. If it's not new, don't pass it.
Exactly.
Those types of things. Those little
exactly.
tricks, right?
And keep in mind, it is an upload. You are uploading something, so it has like a time that it's taking to do that.
Yeah, and it tends to be slower than our downloads.
And that's going to affect the user.
Yes.
So they're going to go along and they're going to die. You don't want it to be like big pause, and we're done. Let's move on. like if they die, they want to just die and then move on to the next screen, get started playing on the game, respawn.
Well, in reality, you should be doing that behind the scenes,
exactly.
synchronously.
Exactly. Like you, if you don't want to do it there, you would save the data on their side, push it over to the side, and then when they leave the game or whatever.
Yeah, one of the things I always say too is never steal the gameplay thread. Never steal that thread.
Never
if you're
steal
doing something else, do it in the background on another thread. Don't touch the gameplay
thread. And for our example, we just did it in the gameplay thread.
Yeah.
But yeah, you definitely want to keep all that stuff in mind. You don't want to interrupt their gameplay. You don't want to do all that stuff. You don't want to ever give them a moment to say, there's a bit of a stutter there.
Yeah, there's a lag there.
Yeah, there's a lag there. You push it all to the side, then upload it later. And that's another thing to keep in mind when they're not on the internet connection. Push it all to the side, save it in their local data, and then when they do connect to the internet, it'll push all that stuff that they've saved from before.
Million and one ways to do this.
Million and one ways. Yeah. But those are all things to consider because they will affect the user experience, which I'm sure you want to be good, so you make millions and millions and billions of dollars, and stuff like that. So also, make the data in a very easily read format.
Yes.
Because you might not be the only one reading it. You might have people working on this project with you, or maybe you're going to throw this over to somebody else, like Microsoft, and they're going to want to be able to read it, and that's good, too. Else they might not pay you.
We appreciate it.
Yeah, who knows? Who knows? So also keep an eye on what metrics you're tracking.
Yeah.
And what I mean by that is just make sure they're important.
Yeah.
You don't want to track everything. You could track everything, and maybe your game calls for tracking everything. You've got, like, Skyrim levels of data and
all
that stuff.
But then you have to remember you have to push all that data up at some point.
Exactly. You have to push all that data up. You have to pull all that data down. You have to analyze that data. There is big companies like, you got your Blizzard and, EA and all these giant game companies. They have whole sections of people that are just working on analytics.
Yeah.
I think, Valve has a guy. They pay a lot of money just to read data and say, what's going on there? And that takes time.
And actually, Azure has a lot of things that can help you with that. We
Azure
were talking about
a lot
that a little
things.
Bit, machine learning and stuff like that.
Machine learning.
Do all that. That so you don't have to have someone sitting there and actually trying to do it themselves.
But sometimes you do need some man hours. You do need somebody sitting there. So you got to keep that in consideration. How long is this going to take me to analyze?
Yeah.
Whether I'm doing it with a computer or then reading out the data or I'm just reading the data myself.
Yeah.
Us, we made a heat map. So how long is it going to take to make that heat map? And then how long is it going to take me to sit there and go, okay, so this is a problem area? You have to keep all that stuff in mind because it's going to take time away from your development or your expansions and your DLCs that you're going to charge for. All kinds of stuff.
Very important.
Very important. So
what did we learn today?
I hope that we learned how to use a bit of Azure.
Mm-hmm.
I hope we learned a bit of what Unity didn't know, how to do a plugin for Unity.
Yeah, it was kind of neat, too. It was kind of a side learning aspect there, as you kind of got to see how to actually incorporate a plugin inside of Unity, which is very, very helpful.
Which is neat. And once you learn how to do a plugin in Unity, you then realize, well, I'm
the
not
world
limited to
opens
Unity.
Pretty drastically when you realize you can bring in pretty much anything you want.
You're like, Unity's nice, but I don't know, I like this sound library, and I want to put it in Unity.
Yeah.
And you could do that.
Yeah, whatever
you just
you
have
want.
To sort of modify a few things, and you're good to go. How can we apply this to other aspects of games? We did heat mapping for areas of interest, but you can do anything. You can save the player stats.
And I'd also like to point out the fact that this isn't necessarily, the library you built doesn't need to be heat mapping.
No.
You built a storage library that stores data, stores analytic data, right, in essence. So if we wanted to, we could put, maybe it was shots fired, bullets fired in our game. That wouldn't make sense to distribute it as a heat map.
No.
But we can still save that using the same library up in Azure and then pull that down and just read it in a text file.
Yep.
Right, or something along those lines.
And like Longboat specifically deals in vectors.
Yes.
For that part of it. But you can modify that to do anything you want. Anything you want. It doesn't have to be a vector.
That's what's nice about the fact that it's open source.
Exactly. And if you're not sure about how to do something, like I said.
Reach out. Yeah, we'd be glad to talk to you about it.
I mean, I'm unemployed. So there's that, but no, it's very modifiable. There's lots of options there, and like I said, I'm excited to see what you guys do with it because there's stuff that I didn't think about.
And any job offers, send it his way.
Apparently, yes.
he's looking.
So what can we expect from this kind of information? Well, you can expect that your game will be more balanced, more fun.
Yes.
Right? Or less fun if you want that.
Yeah. Well, you'll know your audience a lot better. You'll know what your players are doing inside of your game. When you push a game up there, you don't really have an idea of what's happening unless you actually can see inside what the users are clicking on.
I'm sure we've all played a game where you get to a point and you're like, oh, this is a death trap. Like in your Call of Duties or whatever game.
I'm throwing out Battletoads.
Battletoads? Okay, Battletoads.
The whole, like, having to fly the saucer. Oh, mm-hmm. that level, I'm telling you.
You'll get to a point where, you always die there. And and your people are like, oh, you can't get past this point. It's a really hard point. And maybe you didn't intend for that to be that way. Mm-hmm. It turned out that way. Maybe you like it. Battletoads, they probably don't care. But other games, maybe you're like, well, it needs to be a bit simpler because I need them to get to that next part and the next part.
You might have placed something in the world in the wrong spot, and this caused this huge error, right? So without being able to see that,
and in your heat map, you'll see that's the problem right there.
Yeah,
right? and then you can tweak it. And that's also
very, very important.
That's also a very important thing too. Is once you have that data, how much do you tweak? I'm gonna leave that up to you, but it's really tough to know that. Like, mm-hmm. you can't just be like, that's an issue. Rip
discussion.
It out.
Yeah.
Because if you do that, then you have another issue of now there's nothing happening there.
Yeah.
You know, you have to make sure that you're making small pushes in the right direction as opposed to just totally changing it.
Yeah.
You know,
it's hard to predict. It's hard to predict, right?
And then sometimes you want to do both. Who knows?
Yeah. But no, very, very awesome. I think, you know, I've learned a lot from today. I'm excited to, you know, start playing around with this in some of my projects. Thank you very much. Thank you for all of you for tuning in, and hopefully, you've learned a little bit today. Thanks to Rory for taking the time to explain this all to us and for building it and for sharing it with mm-hmm. everybody open source. So, yeah, make sure you go ahead, pull that down, make any changes, add some pull requests, any issues, make sure you let us know. Thank you very much. Happy coding.